Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, you great podcast humans. Thank you for downloading this particular episode of the podcast, because that means you care about independent music, whether it's punk, hardcore, metal, indie rock, emo. It is a wide umbrella that I cast here, you know, which may be a detriment because some podcasts, you know, double down on the fact that like they're very specific to a genre. And as long as it falls under the DIY umbrella, that's what I care about. And today is a person who is a very, very important foundation to a venue and our music scene in general. His name is Dave Castillo. He is the lead booking dude. That's not his official title, but he works at St. Vitus Bar in New York City. And for those of you that have paid attention the past, 10 or so years, realize that that is, kind of a mecca to play when you end up booking a tour, or they do a lot of really cool one-off events, or like maybe a secret show from a band playing a festival, like so many cool events all up and down the genres and spectrums of heavy music, whatever you broadly defines that for you. But Dave is a great dude. He also plays in a electronic music project called Confines, and St. Vitus just recently was successful in doing a Kickstarter for a new book, a compendium done by my friend Nathaniel Shannon, who is a great dude. And he actually wanted, to kind of promo the Kickstarter. You know, we weren't able to sync it all up, but you go to stvitusbar.com. You'll be able to follow along in the journey, because I know that they will obviously have books for sale as a individual basis as opposed to part of the Kickstarter. But it's a very important venue, and I love speaking to people who work behind the scenes to bring you the bands, because, you know, sometimes that is something that gets very overlooked in celebrating these experiences. So you can support the show for absolutely free. This will help out. You can leave a rating and review on the Apple Podcast charts. Not the charts, but the podcast player in which you are listening to it. It influences the charts. See where I'm going there? And it helps the show get discovered by the people who should discover it. And then you can also leave a rating on Spotify. And again, that helps the great algorithm, as it were. You can also follow the show along on social media, Instagram. That's the place where I primarily post. And I also have a link in the show notes to follow along on YouTube as well, for those people that enjoy consuming podcasts via YouTube. And you can always reach out to the show, which is me, at 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. Love to receive all the feedback. I will be posting a bonus episode later this week, a conversation that I posted on the Outbreak podcast feed. For those of you who are not following along, you should, because it is a great chat that I had with Jem from Speed. And it was in front of a live audience. It was great. And I just wanted to share that here in order for you to follow along with the journey on the Outbreak official podcast. So I'll be doing that later this week. And I have to talk. I was able to witness an amazing show. Like, we recently are just on the heels of Sound and Fury. I was not able to go because I was out of town, but watched all the videos and, you know, checked all the scene reports, as it were. It seemed like everybody had an incredible time, and the audience was really excited to participate in watching all the bands and coming out in mass, which is great. But I was able to catch Unbroken, Undertow, Def Club, No Plan, Crashing Forward, School Drugs, and I think that's all. Oh, Abstain. There we go. A stacked lineup, as it were, at the almighty Shea Cafe in San Diego, California. And oh my gosh, like, this was such a special show. And I know for anybody that, like, witnessed the Indecision Fest that happened over this past weekend as well. Talk about a busy time in hardcore. Holy moly. It's a wealth of riches just all over the country for all these great shows. But anyways, Unbroken is such a special band to me, and I know many other people, and it was great to see people come out of the woodwork, see people who hadn't seen in like 10 plus years, because obviously the pandemic and life and everything else. But it was so, so cool, and it was very emotional as well. It was one of those things where, you know, watching these songs played in front of people who have this deep connection, and watching tears well up in their eyes, and then watching, you know, the band members, like, have, you know, be emotional. Like, it was just such a special event and a show. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe 200 people there, 250 people there. And everybody was, like, so locked into the experience. It just felt, you know, it reminded me of why I care about this stuff so deeply, even though I do a podcast on a weekly basis about this. So I'm reminded constantly why it's important to me. But anyways, had to share that insight with you. And I hope that you get to maybe watch the band. They're actually just announced a show. Unbroken is playing in Philly with Blacklisted in October, which is really, really exciting. I'm going to try to make my way out to that, because Unbroken is definitely an all-timer for me. And Blacklisted, I mean, holy moly, I've seen that band a lot, but they never continue, or they never disappoint. So they never continue to disappoint. Like, that's a phrase that anybody says. But anyways, let's talk to Dave Castillo from St. Vitus and Confines, and it's a great discussion, so check it out, because that's why you're here. So anyways, here's Dave. I know clearly you are celebrating the fact that St. Vitus has been in business for, you know, 10 years, which, I mean, realistically, for any, you know, venue, restaurant, bar, like, 10 years is a big deal. Like, it's not easy. I don't need to tell you that.
Yeah.
but, and I realize this is kind of like, you know, walking into sort of a cliched question, but when people, you know, kind of reflect that back to you, as far as like, hey, you've been doing this for 10 years, like, what kind of, you know, either emotions or thoughts kind of spring to your mind in regards to that moment of reflection?
Oh man, that I'm getting older and that I feel like it's just one of those things too, where I've always been generally like young in every environment I've sort of been in. Like, in my family, I'm the youngest. My friends group, like, especially the people I came up with, I tended to be younger. So to be like, you know, looking back, first of all, we've been open for 12 years. But the book is that we're putting out is on the first 10. So just being like, wow, like I'm constantly like, oh, okay, cool. Like I've been doing this for a while. I'm not like the, you know, obviously a younger person in the room clearly anymore, but like also just like, wow, like there's something to really stand on here that's solid, that's been happening for a long time. Most of my thought process tends to be on things that are going to happen, you know, like I'm always trying to make something happen. So to look back is not really in my, my like normal mode, you know. I'm like, yo, what are we doing 4 or 5 months from now? So it's been really cool, and it's also crazy how much stuff you forget or how people experience it differently than you or all of that. So yeah, it's been really, really something to just kind of look back on it all and be like, oh fuck, that happened. Oh, really? Yeah, we did that. Or like, who brought that show over or whatever, you know? So yeah, it's pretty cool that way. And to see, you know, different generations of people kind of getting into it or coming to the bar, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think most creative people, whether you're playing in a band, putting out a zine, you know, anything like that, you're always looking at the, you know, the new what's next, as opposed to, oh, look, you know, I mean, yes, there's that wave of nostalgia that happens when people remind you about certain things and, you know, you see a photo pop up or whatever. But to have that moment of not even clarity, but just that moment of reflection to be able to look back and be like, yeah, that was pretty sick that we had Carcass play or whatever. Like that is, you do need those moments in order to, I guess, kind of give you the fuel to move forward.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you like, you get that buzz. That's like what makes you want to keep going. You know, I mean, whether it's playing music or, you know, whatever it may be, you're just kind of like, I mean, I'm usually doing this to find a feeling or find someone who has my feelings or something along those lines, you know, just like trying to be like in community and communicate with people and stuff. I don't know, you know, find that place for myself. So I think that music has always sort of done that for me in my life. And it's one of the reasons why I really love it. And there's those times where it feels like everything just sort of lines up, you know, the crowd, the place, the bands, like everything just works in like unison. And when those things happen, or you can bring something to someone that you truly love, that's fucking awesome, you know? And I think it's tied a lot to memory, a lot to a lot of things, right? You could talk to people about, yo, this song came out when I was in college and this happened, or, oh, this song came out and I broke up with this person and like, it makes me feel this way, right? Like it's very like evocative of, you know, people's lives and, you know, periods in their life and stuff like that. And the fact that some people associate their, you know, maybe time in New York, if they've moved away or when they lived in a particular apartment in Greenpoint or whatever, with our place is pretty fucking sick. So to me, that's like a really beautiful thing. So those moments, like they keep you moving forward, you know, and sometimes they're not the same moments for me as somebody else, but hopefully I'm also just making them, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I think you, especially when you are bringing something to a space that, you know, like there's nothing, I mean, yes, you could argue there's, you know, a specialness about locations and like where things are, but, you know, there's nothing special about the building that you're in. It's just about obviously what you do in it, which I know sounds like a total stupid cliche, but it is building that space and that communal vibe in order to make sure that people that do travel from, like you're talking about, where other places where it's like they've heard of St. Vitus, so they need to head there because it's like, oh, I don't even care who's playing. I just like need to go there in order to like tap in.
Yeah, it's Wayne's World too. You know, right. It's like that's pretty much it. You know, it's like
totally.
That's all we're doing. That's all we're doing here. But no, it really is. It's simple and hard at the same time, right? It's like, okay, let's build something in the image of a lot of places that we like beforehand, but that feels contemporary and right to us, and to kind of just stay on the mission, you know, of like providing the stage, you know, for like heavier and darker music of like a lot of different varieties, and being this sort of kind of eclectic, but at the same time with that focus kind of place. And how can we achieve that? And that, you know, changes over time, you know, but at the same time, the underlying mission is pretty uncompromising. And sometimes I think you just not need to be true, man, need to be true to it. You know, sometimes those things, that conviction can be, you know, you'll be like, oh man, like, you know, something else is getting popular or whatever, you know, you just, but fuck that. Just like move with the intention that you have within you and what you're trying to really provide to people. And that's what, you know, we've always really done and tried to do, you know, sometimes more successful than others, but that's the idea. And I think when you have that, you can really, you can be confident when you're, what you're giving to folks, and they see that, they see what, you know, what you're about, what you're trying to do, if you're actually into this shit or not, you know, and just about it, you know? So I still love going to the bar, you know?
Right.
And doing that stuff. And honestly, I know that sounds like very like basic, but it's what it needs to be still. Like if I thought it blew, like I probably wouldn't be doing this anymore. So like that's what I continually just try. I'm like, do we still like it? Like, is it cool? Does it feel right or whatever? You know, we're constantly looking at that. We care about it a lot. And caring is also just like the first step, right? Like, Artie plays music. George plays music. I play music. We know what we want when we play music. So we hope to give those experiences to the bands and then also to the people, you know, who are watching the shows too. So that's like the first, that sort of underlying commitment. And then also the just kind of like knowing what you want out of it. I think that's taken us a long way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, yeah, you could, obviously you could start to throw the, you know, you could do the 450th iteration of Emo Night and, you know, have the, you could follow those trends, but then, yeah, that would lead you to a spot that wouldn't necessarily, like, elements of that would be true, but it's not exactly, you know, the core component of what it is that, why you're doing.
Totally. And you need to balance all that stuff, right? It's like, cool. Like that stuff is cool and people have fun and like, that's great and awesome. You know, we have amazing parties and nights at St. Vitus all the time that are rad and people should go. And that's fun as well, you know, but let's also just for us, we're always just trying to put on great music, like all the time, live music that matters to us, you know, and has that feel. So, you know, it's like, yeah, we can do that too, man. You want to go see go to music for the masses or like new wave night, fucking rips. It's really fun, you know, but at the same time, it's like, okay, cool. We have that, but we also have like, hey, like fucking, you know, Worm just played and it's awesome too. And we want to just try and provide like all of that for people, you know? So, and then finding that balance too, that like really makes sense, you know? So yeah, it's absolutely a constant like tweaking of those things, but like always holding on to that core.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll bounce around a little bit with St. Vitus in the future, but putting the focus on you, I know you were born and raised in Long Island, correct? With three older siblings, right? Or no?
Yeah, LIHC, okay. Baby.
Of course, Long Island Hardcore. Yes, I know. Shout out to Silent Majority, obviously. So what was the house like growing up? Because I know like you come from a, you know, multicultural background in regards to, you know, your parents were born in Colombia or where do they?
Yeah, both of my parents are from Bogota. And sure. I was born and raised on Long Island. Yeah, you know, like I grew up in Wantagh, which is like right by Jones Beach, and like about, I'd say, you know, like about an hour train ride to Penn Station. And yeah, that's where I came up, and like I you know, grew up, and then like just kind of learned about everything, you know, was just a kid out there, and then, you know, discovered you know, punk and hardcore music and like metal and stuff when I was about like, you know, really it was like grunge that was like the real first thing, you know, it was like, that was like huge, you know, when I was like 10, 11, 12, you know, and I was like, yep. Yo, Nirvana, Soundgarden, what's up, you know? Right. And then that just kind of started my love for things like that. But like my parents didn't really listen to any, not much like, you know, like rock music or anything like that. Like they were really, it was mostly like Spanish language, you know, like cumbia and merengue and salsa and like Latin pop and stuff like that, you know, like, and then there was like 80s radio you know, like Michael Jackson and Madonna and George Michael and stuff like that. That was really, and Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue, right? Just like 80s pop radio. Mm-hmm. That was really the most like English speaking music I really like heard like around the way. And then it was my older brothers who like were into like Led Zeppelin and GNR and stuff. And they had been, you know, they were kind of like, when I was a little kid, like showing me a couple of things, you know, I'm like, yo, check this out. And then that's how I started just kind of like being interested in music really. My parents weren't like, yeah, we're playing like Allman Brothers records and like Cream records and shit. Like that didn't really happen for me.
I have the privilege and the honor of sharing with you rockabilia.com. Oh my gosh. I love this website. They are a great purveyor of band merch all across the spectrum. I don't care whether you're into metal or hardcore or classic rock or reggae, whatever it is, they got it. And I am giving you a discount code, 100 words or less. Please use that code. It gets you 10% off your entire order. And dare I say, you can maybe use that more than once. I'm not positive. I haven't tried it myself, but you know, maybe try a second order and see if it works. But regardless, they are all officially licensed pieces of merch, and they have like over 500,000 items. So this is a real deal. The bands get paid. None of this bootleg stuff where bands obviously don't see a dime of it. And you know, that is a thing that people do. They ship it from the Midwest here in the United States of America, so it gets to you lickety-split. They have great customer service if there's any issues whatsoever, and hardcore kids work there. That's like my criteria of supporting businesses in general, where it's like, yo, you got an affiliation with like punk or hardcore? Like, does anybody know what's up with that? Okay, cool, I'll buy your stuff. Which, you know, I know is maybe a little myopic in regards to the, you know, support of businesses, but anytime a person has an affiliation with that, I'm all in on. So rockabilia.com. Officially licensed merch. Get 10% off your entire order. 100 words or less. Rockabilia.com. Enjoy.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Like you said, your older siblings were putting you onto stuff and everything. Were you, you know, like going through elementary school and maybe a little bit of junior high, were you, you know, did you care about school? Were you a sports kid? Where did you kind of find yourself gravitating towards, knowing that music was, you know, your passion? Where did you find yourself, you know, sort of coloring within the line, so to speak?
Man, I think I was just like trying to survive.
Okay.
Like in a lot of ways, like I feel... basically I feel like, I was kind of a nerdier kid for sure. Like I played like Magic the Gathering and I like comic books and I liked music. And I was kind of like a little bit on the nerdier side of life for sure. But like I also skateboarded and like I had like this little crew of friends, shout out to my best friend, Josh, and also my buddy, Nick Abel, Matt Mulvey. Like we were like this little crew that was like pretty eclectic. Like Nick was like a fabulous athlete. Like dude was like an amazing pitcher in baseball. Like he got drafted by the Mets at a point. And then like Josh was really good at skateboarding and they like we kind of like crossed over some lines with our little like crew where it was like, okay, there were like, you know, like jock kids and stuff like that who were like, fuck with us. Cause you know, Nick and Josh and Matt were all like athletes a little bit. And like, I played tennis a bit growing up. So I was actually pretty good at playing tennis. So I did that, but then I didn't do anything else. And then I just pretty much just like chilled with them. So I kind of was like in this little bit of a nebula zone, but those were my friends and they were into all sorts of different things. Cause Nick's older brother, Chris, was friends with another dude named Chris Theodoro. And this kid was really into like punk and metal and like what was like ripping like, yo, VOD, this band's amazing. I Hate God, like way early on. And he was like 4 years older than I was, you know? And I just thought that Chris Theodoro and like this whole crew over here, they were like, to me, like the coolest people, you know? They had like more of like a bohemian edge to them. And I was like, really like, ooh, what's this? This is interesting. And then Josh was into playing music. He was a good drummer and he was in this punk band called Life of Riley, which was hysterical. And I started going to like local punk shows, like Spiky Hair, like Liberty Spikes.
Liberty Spikes, yeah.
Like Mohawks, Bondage Pants, like straight up, like, you know, Leopard Creepers and stuff. And I was like, that's when that all started unfurling for me a lot. And that's when I realized like, yo, I'm not just into like music. I like subculture. And also I was very into, I think like the nerdier side of myself, I was really into like sociology and like politics and stuff. Like I always really enjoyed like my social studies classes and things of that nature. And so I found a lot of that in this music. And I thought that that was interesting, you know? So I think that really like opened it up for me a lot. And I just was captivated, you know, like I would sit in front of them, just watch like MTV, like all day. I was like raised by that a little bit, you know? I had two parents that worked and they were always there for me and they're fucking wonderful. Shout out to Didi and Julio. But
right.
I was in front of the TV a lot. And so like, I was just a product of like the 90s a lot, you know, these crossovers between metal and grunge and rap and, you know, techno music and stuff. And a lot of that, I think back to it, it informs a lot of my tastes now, you know? But that was where I was sort of at. I was just sort of like this nerdy kid, but I've always been able to fucking talk and hang. So right. I was right. Just like, all right, cool. You know? So I kind of was able to get on with a bunch of folks in like this little group. Like I said, we were just like, you know, Nick had this older brother who was cool and we were just, oh, that's his, like him and his little homies, you know? And then as we kind of came up and we were like seniors and stuff, we kind of like ended up kind of like running the show. It was pretty sweet. So that was pretty great. I won homecoming king of my high school, which was hysterical.
Dude, I appreciate that that nod because it is I do think there is something to your point. Like when people do get into, you know, subculture and start to, you know, because I know you booked shows in your teenage years as well. Like when you do have that ability to socialize and you can fit into a lot of different groups, that does get you to that point of where it's like, oh, dude, yeah, Dave, like homecoming king, whatever, even though, you know, theoretically you should be pushing against it because you're like, oh, dude, I'm so punk or whatever. It's like, well, all right, that's fine. Like, yeah. I'm cool with it.
I think that I kind of like, and I think that this is what I sort of meant by like survive. It's like, I'm not going to be, you know, like this jock kid, I'm just going to be a chiller. I can hang like, and that's what I could do. I could drink 240s of Old English and hang out in the woods. And like, people would think I'm like decently cool or whatever, you know what I mean? And like, I was like a nerdy kid, but I was trying to acclimate a little bit with that. And I kind of found myself a little bit with that. And then, but I was like into punk stuff. So like my socializing would be like high school party or like punk show, you know, and going to see Life of Riley play with like the Loiterers and stuff, or Kill Your Idols,
right?
And Violent Society and stuff like that. And that's what started pulling me over into like, you know, hardcore and things like that, and meeting people from other towns. And that was really, you know, something, because like on Long Island, like at the school districts, unless you went to private school, it's like by town. So I went to Wantagh High School, you know, and then there's like Mepham, and that's like in Merrick, and like all these, you know, different kids. So like, you know, your town could feel very myopic out there, you know, like that was your little world, and like the internet didn't exist, you know? So it's like my world was, there was this little, on Sunrise Highway in Wantagh, there was these three stores in a row. There was Collector's Comics, CD Warehouse, and Da Vinci Tattoo, right? This was the center of my fucking universe. This and Wantagh Park, where I used to go skate, right? This was everything to me. Go to Collector's Comics, I'd fucking like pick up some comics, play some Magic or whatever the fuck. CD Warehouse, go get my shit, you know, music stuff. And then as I got, you know, a little bit more in tune with like hardcore music and stuff, Tommy from Silent Majority worked at Da Vinci Tattoo. So the window in Da Vinci Tattoo always was like full of hardcore show flyers that he would put up on in the window. And it was like, this was it, man. Like, this is my Mecca. It was like that. And totally. And then especially when I was younger, you know, before I could like drive, which again, Long Island, it's very suburban, and you know, so these things really spread my horizons. But yeah, growing up, it was just like, that was it, man. It was just like nerdy shit, hanging out, and like I was just like this little like weird kid, but I got along with people.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. You're like, I'm gonna put out the vibe over here, and then I'm gonna go hit up my spots, and yeah, I love you.
And I could kickflip. Pretty sweet. Like I can do a couple things.
There we go.
Cool.
That's all you need, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did want to dig into the, cause I know in other interviews you've spoken about, just like booking shows in general. And I know that you put on a show, 14, 15, and, like, I guess building that, you know, space or whatever, whether it's just like, all right, you know, I'm renting a local hall and I'm, you know, putting on, whatever, hopefully 50 kids show up, that sort of stuff. It does take a, for lack of a better term, like a discipline to do that and to want to do that. Where, like, was that kind of always like hardwired in you? Was that something that you were looking to do, or was that just something be like, well, like, yeah, I'll put on a show because I just want like my friends' bands to play or whatever?
I think it really came from just wanting to participate more. I think that when I was getting into punk, there was like a lot of, I remember that there was a very concerned thing where it's like, you don't go to a show and not see the entire show. That was kind of like you're a poser. Like it's kind of sacrilege. It's like, you don't do that. This is punk. We care about all the bands. We go and see all the shit. And we're like, you know, about this sort of community. And at that time as well, it was like, there was a lot of like ethos around like contributing to the scene, you know, whether you were a photographer or somebody who wrote for a zine, you played in a band, you did like different things. Right. And I thought that that was really important. Like, oh, cool. Like this isn't rock star stuff. We're here to like make this, like we make it what it is. Right. And so I was like, oh, that's great. I was never, like, Josh was like really musically inclined. I just never really played that much. And I was like, maybe I could help like organize some stuff. And so that's where it really sort of started for me. And I was just like, yo, if I could just get me and my friends together, I bet you we could do pretty good in terms of like just getting some people down for a show and to create some stuff. And it was really just that innocent, that impetus of just like, I just, you know, I want to be a part of it in one way or another. And I think as I got older, I fantasized about, you know, the people who were like movers and shakers in like, you know, New York and like the whole like, you know, Lower East Side, you know, Iggy Pop, you know, kind of like sort of downtown scene, Talking Head, CBs, like all of that stuff became very like, whoa, like the Ramones, all that. I was like, whoa, like I would go to St. Mark's Place and be like, this is fucking a punk paradise. Like, this is crazy, you know, to me, that there are all these people here that are into this shit, you know? And that was very interesting and powerful to me. And to me, that was the big show. The big show was over there, you know, and it was an hour away by train, pretty much, you know, which I was lucky enough that I was able to go and like just start, you know, seeing things in the city as well. But that was really where it really started for me. It was just like, I want to contribute in some way. And that was my way.
Right. Yeah. I like that. And when you started to like get into all this stuff and, you know, you were presumably, you know, staying out of like big trouble, maybe some general mischief here and there, knowing your skateboarding past, were your parents like, what is David into? Like, is this like, I mean, clearly they were permissive enough to like let you do all these things, but was there any sort of, you know, pushback in the house as far as that was concerned?
Oh, absolutely. My dad said that I dressed like a Christmas tree, and I got extremely upset with him, and now we laugh about it a lot, but that was very funny. But my parents were, you know, my mom was very, let him do his thing, you know, and my dad too. Sometimes my dad would be like, he's just got to go and be like a dude, like in the world. And they're amazing. And they let me follow my nose so much, you know, as long as I was kind of doing enough of the right things, you know, in school and other things like that, they kind of let me cook, you know, and yeah. That was incredible. And so that was great. And I was also lucky that, you know, they had a lot of trust in Josh too. If Josh was down with it, they were like, okay, David's cool. So totally. Josh is like, comes up a lot, cause he's like my brother, you know? So, and so I think that was pretty amazing. And they wanted, I think in a way culturally for me to experience this country, you know, that they brought me to like get everything out of it in a way too, which was pretty sweet. They're like, go to the city. It's cultural. Like that's important. You know, like, and we would go as a family to do stuff too. You know, when I was younger and stuff, and then as I developed my own taste and stuff, I was like, cool. Like, I remember one time there was like some relatives in, from Colombia, and like, they were going to see, I think it was Stomp. Stomp played forever, like in the East Village. It had like a fucking like 40-year run or some shit, you know? And so I went to see it with like my family and stuff. And then I was like, all right, check it out. There's a show that I believe the Casualties were playing.
Okay.
And like Os Rotten on St. Mark's Place. And it was like four blocks away. And I was like, I beg of you, if I see Stomp with you guys, could I just please go and try and catch like a couple of these bands? And they let me go. And so I saw like the Casualties, Os Rotten, and like maybe like Subhumans or something. It was a sick show. And I was like, that's incredible. I look back now and I'm like, yo, my parents are pretty fucking all right, man. Thank you. You know, so that was pretty amazing. And they kind of let me do that. But, you know, there's definitely were times where it was like not a little more touch and go and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, trusted me. And so then that was that, you know, so that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure like as you started to, you know, like you said, get involved, like book shows and do all those things that you felt like you needed to do to contribute, especially from the show throwing perspective. I know that everybody makes a million mistakes and you probably obviously still make mistakes as well. What were some of those like learning moments? I'm not bringing this up to, you know, embarrass you, but what were those things like as you started to, you know, put on shows that you were like, oh, so I need to do that different next time as you were, you know, kind of learning?
Oh man, there were so many things that I just did completely wrong, okay. You know, sure. And like, there's a difference where you go from also being like more like a passionate amateur to like a professional. And there's just a difference of like caliber, I think there, you know, and for the longest time, I was just more like a passionate amateur, like in the mechanics. I was just like, fuck it. I'll just talk to the band and do whatever. And like, I think that I just, I'm like a bit of a product of a different time too. You know, like when I started doing this stuff, like Facebook came out when I was 18, to give you like a context. So at the beginning, it was just like, you know, the flyer, the hand to hand thing. And then as, you know, things sort of evolved with like, you know, media and communications and things like that, like as much as it's changed, it sort of remained the same. But it, to navigate all those things and the new tools and the way that people do things has been really interesting. And at a time there wasn't like, this shit wasn't fucking popular. Like people did not give a fuck about hardcore. They didn't give a fuck about metal. Like there was no coverage in magazines or websites or anything like that. Like none of this was happening. Except for like things that were very dedicated to those particular scenes, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was just really like, I'm going to talk to this band person over here and then that one. And my organizational skills, because I was like half an alcoholic, were like really bad. And so I think that I usually had more along the lines of like a good aesthetic guy. I'm like, yeah, this band rips and this one and blah, blah, blah. But if I could, you know, obviously if anyone could, you know, reteach themselves something with like 20 years experience or so, they would probably do a lot of things different. So yeah, I fucked up all over the shop. Like, oh, I paid this one or whatever, or that one, or, oh man, I put like fucking 10 bands on this show. I should not have done that. And now I owe way too much money and so on and so forth, you know? And, yeah. And you do it at the beginning because you're just like, I love this shit and this band's sick and that band's sick and blah, 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 blah. But then you learn, you know, and now, I mean, it's just, it's incredible to me how, you know, just how skilled and pro and everything really is nowadays. And in some ways it's a little annoying, if I'm being honest, because I feel like, you know, it's like any fucking band that can draw like 6.5 people has like a booking agent and blah, blah, blah. And it's like all this paperwork. It's like, everybody like take it easy. Like,
right. We don't need all this right now. Yeah, totally. We don't need all this now.
Let's see if you're fucking good, you know, or whatever, you know, like, it, like, what are we even talking about here? You know? So yeah. that can be a lot. And then that creates different layers in terms of the interaction and how it can be in terms of with just knowing folks and stuff, you know, but those things have changed a lot. So just traversing all of those things, I think, was my biggest challenge. And then a lot of it was just on myself in terms of like being organized with actually trying to pull all the different elements together and kind of communicate like effectively, you know? And it's just changed so much, so many different ways, you know? It's just like, it's just funny to think about. It's like, yeah, man, you know? And then I talked to my business partners and they're like, yeah, we went on tour with like a dialer, like MapQuest didn't even exist, you know? And you're like, shit, okay.
Yeah, totally. This is a whole different ball game.
It's a different world. Different world.
Yeah, exactly. The kind of looking at St. Vitus, obviously, as the, you know, institution that it is now, and clearly you've had a very specific point of view, like you said, in regards to, you know, the type of bands, events that you book there and everything like that. I'm sure there's been times where you and your partners have kind of discussed in regards to the idea that, you know, St. Vitus, like for your average, you know, maybe civilian that is not used to anything, you know, from an aggressive music perspective, would show up at St. Vitus and be kind of like, okay, like I get the vibe, but like maybe I feel a little bit, you know, alienated or whatever. Does that concern you? Is that just like, well, obviously we're not for everybody, so we don't need to play to your, you know, average, whatever, Wall Street banker and stuff like that. What are the conversations that happen around that?
I think the conversation is that we need, you know, people to fill the room and that's it. So that's all that I'm concerned about, you know, okay. Like I don't need, you know, this isn't Madison Square Garden. You know, like the project can live in the margins a little bit or a lot of it because we know what we need for it to be successful. If the more you go up in scale, you know, in terms of like size of the venue, etc., you know, there's a smaller pool of bands that can fill said place, right? let's talk about MSG. How many acts fill MSG, you know, or like an arena that are arena size? There's much less as opposed to, you know, groups that can fill like a small club, right? There's a lot more. But those things work on like different economies of scale. So what we're just hoping for is like, okay, we don't need everybody. We need these folks tonight, you know, and then maybe the next night, a different set of folks that could be into a different sort of thing, but that fits our sort of flavor, you know? And so, yeah, if it's not for you, it's not for you. That's totally cool. You know, like it shouldn't be for everybody, I don't think, you know, and in a way where it's like, you know, we're a home for these sorts of musics. And, you know, that's important. Like, I think that it's important that, you know, SOBs has been a home for hip hop in Manhattan for a million years, you know, or LPR has done a ton of like, you know, quote unquote world music stuff for a really long time. And that's great, you know, and like there's amazing clubs like Elsewhere and Basement and stuff that put on really amazing electronic music shows. And I love going to these things, all these things as a human being, you know. But where's this, the space, the place, the thing for, well, we're into metal, punk, hardcore, industrial music, like all this stuff, right? Okay, cool. Let's be that, you know, because there wasn't a place, and there wasn't a place I think that really like flew the flag and tried to be that sort of mid-sized club for what we were into at the time, you know? So that's just, you know, we're just like looking for a home, man, you know, and trying to establish something. That's the way that I at least viewed it at the time. And I would say my partners did too, you know?
I'm in love with evilgreed.net, and not only because they are a amazing web store solution for record labels and bands to be able to sell their merch to you and all of the worldwide customers that exist on the internet, but they act like a record label and they have a very specific point of view. They haven't opened up their doors to every single, you know, genre of music and every style of band. They focus on things, what I like to call, you know, artistic heavy stuff. And I joked around with them where they should actually use that as a tagline. We sell artistic heavy stuff, but let me just list some of the bands that they actually have a lot of cool pre-order stuff going up right now. So they have a huge line of Incendiary t-shirts up for pre-sale, Jesus Piece, Lamp of Murmur. They have some Better Lovers stuff, The Armed. They work with a lot of different bands of that sort of, you know, artistic heavy stuff. Like I said, they ship from Berlin, Germany. But before I tell you more, you need to use this promo code 100 words that gets you 10% off your entire order. And I realize I said that they're based in Berlin, Germany. So us in the United States might be a little scared to order from them. Don't. The shipping rates are advantageous for us, and I've ordered from them before. I've got it in like a week. It's great. It's easy. They have so much cool stuff. I definitely have found myself just like continually adding to my cart, being like, oh, dude, oh, look at this sick one, long sleeve. Oh my gosh. I need that too. And so to solve your problem, that's why 100 words is the promo code, 10% off your entire order, and enjoy shopping at evilgreed.net.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like you said, I mean, you and obviously all of your partners have played in bands and continue to play in bands. I'm going to guess like your first experiences playing shows and stuff like that, was that mostly in high school? Because I imagine, you know, Primitive Weapons wasn't your first band.
It was actually like, it was my second band.
Okay.
In college, I was in a band called Aeschylus. for a little while that was more like this sort of like Orchid style, like kind of screamo-y thing, really okay. into like that stuff, a little bit heavier and stuff. And like a really fun band that I had with some friends. And I did that for a couple of years. And that was cool. And we played all sorts of shows on the island and stuff like that. And then, and that really like, you know, we got like pretty decently popular and like people showed up to the shows and, you know, it really developed like an outsider sense of kind of hardcore community that I was sort of a part of. Like, one of my also very best friends, Chris Enriquez, who was the drummer of On the Might of Princes at the time.
Yep.
He invited us to play with them a bunch, and we became like really fast friends. And that's like some of my dearest friends in the world have come from that whole kind of time on Long Island and stuff like that. That was sort of, you know, adjacent to, you know, some of the, it was sort of a little bit past the, you know, Silent Majority VOD thing. And then on to like new eras of kind of hardcore at the time. And so I was, you know, really into that. And I learned so much from watching On the Might and Chris and like all these other Ladderman and like all these other bands like doing their thing and just seeing how they went about it. And it was really cool. And then, you know, we were invited to play with them and it was really just an amazing time. And then I kind of like lost it. I feel like after I graduated from college and stuff and I was just kind of like working and doing whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just like kind of concerned with being, trying to figure out how to be an adult,
sure.
make a couple of bucks and do shit like that. But then I guess long story short is that my best friend passed away and it really brought me into, and obviously very young, I was 23 years old when that happened. And it brought me into this place where I think early on, maybe earlier than other folks, whatever, I just was like, I'm sitting here, I'm a copywriter in advertising. I don't really give a fuck about this. And I need to like reconnect with the things that like matter more to me because like life's fucking short. And that's when I started thinking a lot about, hey, like, I don't play music at all. I haven't done X, Y, or Z. And there was this time where, honestly, financially, I shouldn't have done this, but I just, like, left my job. And for, like, I would say for, like, 5-6 weeks, I would just, like, went on unemployment and racked up a way too high credit card bill before I got, like, a bar backing job or, again, like, a because I had worked in bars before and then I kind of came back to it. Mm-hmm. And I just like read comic books in the park for like weeks. I just walked to Brooklyn Monster Factory in South Brooklyn and I'd go and I'd read comic books in the park down there and just think about like, what the fuck am I going to do with myself? Cause I can't keep doing this shit. And so I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to fucking DJ. I'm going to play in bands. I'm going to just start living that life. And this chapter now is sort of over. And I just like closed that door and I never looked back. And it was definitely a very emotional decision in a lot of ways. Obviously, the way that, you know, I'm telling it to you now, but it seemed just so obvious to me. And that's when I kind of restarted doing everything. And the first thing that I wanted to do was play music again. That was like the number one scenario. But, you know, I would look around and I just wouldn't really see too many like shows happening or, you know, certain things I was interested in or not. And there was like one dude, Ian, who is doing hardcore gig volume, who did like some really amazing stuff. I liked his stuff. And there was a couple of things there, but I was just interested in this world and reconnecting to myself in a lot of ways. And I was like, all right, cool. Here we go. And I just kind of like did that for a while. And St. Vitus is nowhere in sight at this time. Like nothing, that didn't exist. It wasn't even an idea. Yeah. And going back to Chris, some time passes. I'm DJing and bartending and hanging out, and I'm starting to throw shows, and it's cool. It's fun. And I'm just like, I feel like I'm in the mix, you know, I'm like part of like something. I'm in the mix of something and I'm enjoying it. But Chris, I was like, Chris, you're the best fucking drummer. Like, let's just start a band. Let's start like a hardcore band. And he was like, all right, cool. But like, we need like a songwriter. Like, yeah, you can sing. Cool. Play drums. And I'm like, all right. And at the time, we would go to Matchless all the time in Greenpoint. And who's the bartender at Matchless? It's Artie Shepherd from Mind Over Matter, Nero Type 11, like, you know, all these sick Long Island hardcore bands. And so Chris is like, yeah, let's try and convince Artie to be in a band with us, you know?
Sure.
And I was like, all right, cool. And I was just like, you know, and that was like how it all really started. And I reconnected to playing music again. And then that kind of unfurled into meeting Artie, into a lot of things, including Vitus.
Yeah, no, that's really, I love that, especially what you're talking about, or just the idea of trying to reconnect to something that is so special. But, you know, like many of us get involved with so many other things in our lives that it just pulls you away from that. And so I just like that, you know, that path you took, because obviously that was something that, you know, you planned, but not planned of it to go the way that it has. So it's really cool.
No way, dude. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who knows, you know, how things could have turned out, but like I was committed and I cared. And I also, you know, I was young and I had, you know, no other responsibilities except to, you know, this at the time new young woman I was dating. But that was about it, you know, like I was just like, okay. You know, and so it's pretty remarkable, honestly, when I look back on it. I'm like, I kind of knew the purpose, but there was no like, yeah, set game plan kind of thing. I was just chilling. Same thing that I was doing in high school. I was like, I'm good at drink. I was not drinking 40s now, though. I was more like a whiskey and Bud kind of guy.
Yeah, you evolved, right. Your taste evolved.
We kept going. Yeah, we kept going.
the area obviously in which St. Vitus is in is clearly, you know, changed drastically since you guys have opened, you know, 12 years ago. And, you know, besides rent prices going up, what do you, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you noticed, that have changed in the neighborhood, you know, artisanal coffee shops, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, what have you watched this evolution with kind of like a, oh man, I hope the bottom doesn't fall out here, where we're just like losing our sort of neighborhood regulars and stuff like that? Or is it just like, well, we'll roll with that punch as it comes?
Well, we've never really had neighborhood regulars to start off with, you know, like Vitus is such a destination thing and people come to our place because of, now there are people who go more often than not, you know, depending on music and curation and their tastes and so on and so forth, you know. But I do feel like, you know, it pulls in people from all over the tri-state area, depending, you know. But, you know, there's always that sort of thing, you know, when we started, like, not too many people lived around there. It was way more industrial, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like the fucking West Village or something, you know. It's like, whoa. So, you know, it changes the dynamics a bit for sure. And so it's not always the easiest thing to traverse, but I think we do a good job of it. And we're just trying to provide something that's, you know, cool for, you know, New York and stuff, this cool place to do these sorts of things. Now, maybe some people really don't like that shit, right? Like, they're like, no, I'm like, I don't like upside down crosses and metal bands, right, and, you know, things like that. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, that's also true too. You know, it depends on who you are. It's there goes the neighborhood situation. To me, if there's not that, I'm like, oh my God, why do I even live here? you know? So it's like, it just depends. So yeah, that's the way I kind of see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that people always, like, almost every single interview that either you or your partners have done, where people are just like, oh, dude, like, name some iconic moments and shows that you've done. Like, so I'm not going to do that here, but just, you know, these shows that most people reference are, you know, your Chelsea Wolfe, Carcass, Anthrax, Nirvana, Descendants, et cetera, because all of them clearly have, you know, amazing and emotional stories attached to them. But, you know, going kind of the opposite direction, where it's like a show that you booked, like, maybe that doesn't obviously receive the sort of, you know, press headline, you know, click attention from that perspective that you're really proud that you were able to bring there, or, you know, something that was just, you know, a feather in your cap, even though people maybe don't mention it off the top.
That's a interesting one. I feel like there's a lot of things I'm stoked on that maybe don't bring that right away. But I think one of my favorite things just in general is when there's a younger band that's getting a bit of buzz and getting a bit bigger, and we invite them to play in either a flout sort of thing, or, you know, like a one-off to really, like, qualify just like a little bit more of a moment for them. Right. And I think that we've been willing to do that, like, often over the years, where we're like, yo, this band's amazing, let's do their debut show at Vitus. And now it's just, and it's become more of like a thing where people reach out to us to be wanting to do a one-off like that or something like that. I love that, like, first moment that, like, you know, maybe here's one that happened more recently, like Spy coming out of the, you know, out of the lockdowns and stuff like that. They were getting very popular on the internet, and we reached out to them and were like, yo, come play Vitus. Like, I'll fly you out here. And they played like a 17-minute set to like a packed room. And it was their first, maybe their sixth show ever or something. And it was just totally crazy. And it was amazing, you know? And those, like, first moments like that, I, like, really, I love those. I kind of, like, as much as, you know, people, you know, you just referenced, like, a bunch of stuff of, like, you know, bands that are being able to come back and done, like, really cool stuff. I love those moments because I feel like you're helping maybe this band kind of along the way a little bit, or giving them a little bit of that moment or a foothold in, you know, New York City. And that's really cool to me.
I love that because it, I mean, you see it honestly at music festivals where it's like, you know, a band plays their, you know, sort of like prove it to us set, where it's like, you know, they get put in the middle of the day where it's like, oh, maybe it's a little bit higher than they should be. But then, you know, they play a show and people lose their minds. And then all of a sudden, you know, the internet is a buzz. And so I just like that idea of being able to not only localize it, but then just the idea of, like you said, kind of putting that stamp of approval where it's like, yo, you should best with this band. And, like, you know, we took them out to St. Vitus, and, like, the St. Vitus community supports them. And then it starts to, you know, it helps them along their, you know, journey of validation or whatever.
Right. I just think it's just like, you know, it's cool that we become like this stage that, like, yo, if you could fucking destroy a show at Vitus, you're
song, on your way.
Like, people fuck with you. Yeah, you're on your way. And that's really cool. Like, that was like a far off dream, you know, for us when we started, you know, to be like a place that was able to do both, you know, not be like, oh, like the old man metal bar thing, or like the too hipstery this thing or whatever. Be something that's like a big classic and can kind of play all sides of this, you know? And so that's what we kind of hope to do. But like, I love watching all the young blood, you know, and there sure is a lot of it now in certain scenes. And it's really fun to just participate and give that to folks and be like, yeah, come here, fucking come over here and play and like kick ass and like do your thing.
Right. You know? Yeah. No, I love that. What you were talking about in regards to, you know, the fact that making music like you do with, you know, Confines, is not only does it give you creative fulfillment, but then it ties back into your experience with St. Vitus, where you can make it you know, yo, I want this. I would want this at my shows, so I can kind of put this, you know, hard boiled into the, you know, St. Vitus DNA or whatever. And having those like multiple touch points and then, you know, running like whatever, working at a record label or putting out records, like, do you feel like all of that just kind of adds up to, you know, making the larger project of St. Vitus like more vital?
I think, you know, it makes you interact with music and musicians in just a different way, right? And if anything, it humanizes the whole process for like the other side, you know, like you're just like a part of it, you know? So when I go and I play as Confines and stuff, and I'm just like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I'm just here to like be an artist at the time, you know, and I'm like in Los Angeles doing something, or I'm in, you know, New York or whatever, you know, and it's just, you're interacting in a completely different sort of arena, and it just reminds you what that's like. And I think that's what, like, you know, going back to what we were saying before, it's what I think made us good at this in the first place. So it's kind of like a situation where it's like, don't forget, you know, that this is what we're doing and what we are. And then you can go to other places and, you know, either admire or disparage them depending on your experience, you know? And I think that's good too, you know? And you know, we've learned a lot from other places that we admire and stuff like that, or, you know, things we don't really want to do, you know? So
right.
That's also part of it.
Yeah, of course. You know? Right. And, yeah. You see what other people are doing. I mean, it's like, you know, the joke of people attending weddings or whatever, where you're like, oh, so they did that thing. I'm never going to do that thing.
Yeah, totally. You know, so that's sort of like what you're doing. And so for me, it's also just back to the start, which is just like, I'm just doing this to connect and like be find my people in the world a little bit too, you know, and like making music always makes that really like apparent to me. And like, I still love doing it and making it happen. So yeah, you know, I think that I don't know if I'll always, I don't know, you know, like I can't imagine not really playing and doing what I do in terms of, you know, with Vitus as well. I feel like to me, they go very hand in hand.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah. Right. Like one hand washes the other and they both benefit. The going back to, you know, your parents and obviously giving you that, you know, space to explore and, you know, do get involved with things that are not very common for, you know, kids to get into and subcultures and stuff. I'm sure, I mean, at this point, have they, you know, come to Vitus? Have you invited them to a show? Like, have they experienced kind of what it is that you've been doing over there? Or is that just like too far of a bridge for them to get on?
No way. My mom like just ordered the same Vitus book. She's on it. I mean, they know. Actually, I invited her and my dad to a show many moons ago, I'd say probably, you know, maybe 7 years ago or something. It was like Mutoid Men and Primitive Weapons on like a Tuesday night or something. It was definitely like a weekday or something. And I was like, okay, cool. The young lady I was dating at the beginning of all this, she's my wife now, Marissa. And Marissa, who's amazing, was like, yo, Mars, you got to help me out here. I want to invite my parents to a show, right? And it was great, you know. She, you know, kind of like took them in and we put them in the sound booth and they watched us play and stuff like that. And it was the moment where they just really understood, like, the place is rammed, you know. And like when people knew that they were my parents, they were like hanging out at the bar and people were buying them drinks and like it was just great. And it was just a moment where I think they just understood that it was going, like, whatever is going on there, just people were there and the place is busy. And both of them have owned businesses and they're like, yo, okay, cool. All right, my son, we have, you're like, you're doing something here, you know? My mom was straight up. She was like, yo, you invited me to the show. It's like a weeknight. honestly wasn't sure if there were going to be many people there. She like really like gave it to me like that straight. Like, I got to be honest, I wasn't sure if many heads were going to show up. And then, you know, it was like this crazy show. So I think once they experienced that, they really kind of got that aspect of it. And they understood that, like, hey, this is like a real business, a real thing, and that's cool. And, you know, they've just been very supportive ever since, which is amazing. Yeah.
No, that's super, super cool, especially when it's like the weird things that you've been doing somehow manifest themselves into, you know, other people paying attention to it. And it's like nothing could be, you know, more satisfying for a parent to be like, oh, so like my kid isn't an abject failure. Like, other people are paying attention to it.
Yeah, totally. They're like, yeah, there's a lot of people here. Like, what is it? You know? And right. So that was awesome, you know? And that right there, that was just like enough, you know? She's like, I really don't understand anything else about this. And I'm like, it's okay. You don't need to. It's fine. Just like, this is what it is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Two last things I wanted to hit on was the, you know, the idea of starting to front bands, like you were talking about with Primitive Weapons, and then, you know, clearly what you're doing with Confines, like the straight line between the two, as far as, you know, getting up on stage and performing for people and stuff like that. I mean, it sounds like elements of your personality would fit well within that. But did you feel the transition into, you know, playing shows and singing and performing, was that not, I wouldn't call it easy, but was that somewhat natural, or did you have to kind of like learn to fill those shoes, so to speak?
I think it's definitely like an acquired skill. And like, I still get like nervous, you know, like I have that anxiety in me for a lot of things, honestly. Like, part of it, I think it's what makes me good, I think, is because I give a fuck. Maybe sometimes I can't, like, I don't know, bring too much of a crushing feeling on myself and weight. And I've had to work on like making myself not feel so responsible for every microsecond of everything, you know? But part of that, I think, is what gives me the drive to care and to want to either, you know, give a good experience, and even for myself. But I feel like when it comes to performing, like being on stage, once I kind of like flip the switch a little bit, I do have that, and I just go. It's just like a bit of a different part of me that just like flies out, and then it starts just happening, and it's really cool. You know, I don't think that, you know, you get like this sort of like runner's high sort of vibe, and it just kind of goes. And it's a very special place to be at. And whenever I get it, it's really cool. But it takes time and it takes work. And sometimes you could ruin it for yourself. You know, you could be like, this motherfucker over here on the left, he doesn't love us. And like this, you know, you can like that have this internal monologue that can totally destroy things for you, like anything else, honestly, in life. But when it's going great, it's like you're like sleepwalking. It's like a lucid dream. It's like amazing. And that's when it all feels really right. And so I think I'm better at really letting myself enjoy it more beforehand, before the show, and also being more in command and having less of like a nervous energy when I'm first getting up there and stuff. And that's all like really like learned things, but I want to give sort of the best of myself. But in order to do so, sometimes you need to like chill the fuck out a little bit and like kind of let sure. that kind of flow, you know? So I work more on trying to get into those, the frame of mind that I need to be in to like perform and be, you know, well into it. And I think about that too when I'm doing all this stuff. It's like, that's what you want to kind of give to folks who are, you know, playing at Vitus or at your place or whatever, you know? Because when you're up there and you're feeling good, and I've played at Vitus plenty of times, and like, it sounds great on the stage and you're feeling great and everything else, then everything starts really moving, you know, audience, you, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, energy through the roof, you know, band and all that going like that. So yeah, that's definitely a learned and acquired thing, but I think something that I had like a little bit of a, definitely a proclivity for.
Sure. Absolutely. And in conclusion, the idea, I know that you guys have done variations of different fests and what have you. I'm sure you've discussed a St. Vitus fest where you would you know, take over a lot of venues that you book shows at, and then obviously do stuff at Vitus. Are you guys planning on ever doing anything of that nature, or is that not something you can reveal at this time?
I think we'll see, you know.
Sure.
That's all that I'll say. I think we'll see. But
that's fine. You got to get, I understand. Not trying to give you, you know, air your secrets out there, but I'm just, you know, kind of reading tea leaves, so to speak.
Hey, I'm good at keeping them. That's why I'm good at what I do. So, no problem. But, yeah, we hope to though just keep growing this thing and doing cool stuff and, you know, serving, you know, like just awesome music for people to enjoy at the club and at all the other places that we work out of now with St. Vitus Presents. And yeah, it's been fucking wild past 12 years and we're not really slowing down. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, thank you very much for spending time with me and yeah, keep booking some cool shows out there, man. I appreciate it. And I know many other people do as well.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Pleasure being on the podcast. I've heard it many times with many awesome guests, so I'm down.
There you have it. That was Dave Castillo. And if you, I have actually not had the privilege and honor of attending a show at St. Vitus, so I want to change that in my life because, yeah, I've from every friend that's ever either played there or attended a show there says it's nothing but the best, and it's awesome to hear that. So please check out St. Vitus, and like I said, follow along on their website or socials, and you can see when they have books for sale for the public commemorating their first 10 years as a venue. And shout out to Nathaniel Shannon for being the photographer extraordinaire for documenting that, and everybody that works at St. Vitus, thank you for providing an amazing place for bands to play. Like, that does not go unnoticed for me and many other people that you know, attend shows, broadly speaking. So next week, I have a really fun chat with Eric Egan from Heart Attack Man. And if you are not kind of up in the more sort of modern pop punk world, that's totally fine. I get it. That might be a genre that, you know, gives you a little idiot shivers, or I don't know, idiot shivers is a bad description, but you get what I'm saying, where it's just like, oh man, I can't stand pop punk or whatever. Heart Attack Man is a great band. I don't care what side you land on in regards to those arguments, but they are really good. And Eric is from Cleveland, so we talk a lot about Cleveland hardcore, and that's kind of where he got his you know, his taste of the independent scene, so to speak. So Eric from Heart Attack Man is coming out next week, and until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Because there's nothing like a weekend pause with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.